From the Draco Vista Studios in Phoenix, Arizona, unlocking secrets of writing, conversing with masters of the craft, and just having a lot of fun. It's the Dragon Page, cover to cover.
Hey, welcome everyone to another Dragon Page cover to cover. I'm Michael R. Menengay.
And I'm Michael Stackpole.
And we got all kinds of interesting things happening today. Got a really cool pair of guests that are going to come in and tell you about something really steampunky and cool.
Absolutely.
But, I've been kind of trying to keep the voicemail cleared out. And this one came in the other day. And it's kind of along the lines of stuff that we've been talking about on the show. So I thought, let's just open with this.
Hello, Dragon Page. This is Father Beast from Santa, Utah. And I was listening to your talking about this new author, name of Hawking, who has published several books, self-published, on the Kindle, and just landed a deal with a major publishing house. I would think, wouldn't it be great if she only gave the publishing house the rights for the print copies and retained the electronic copies for herself, so she was still publishing the electronic copies, and basically used her print copies as advertisement for you can also buy this electronically at such and such.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It would be great.
It would be. Whether or not that's going to happen, not sure.
Right. Well, here's how it breaks down. The major publishers are all declaring that they will never sever ebook rights and print book rights.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, we already know that in the bidding for Hawking, and you probably, the commentary you may have missed or follow up, we talked about how Amazon was involved in that, and apparently Amazon did have a deal with a print house, so it looked like there was going to be a severing, that was being worked there. But right now, they don't feel that they can survive by severing the rights. What's been happening, and it's been totally bizarre for authors, is that if you've got a contract where they do not have ebook rights, many publishers have been asserting that they actually own the ebook rights anyway.
Yes, I know. I'm dealing with that right now with my book.
Oh, really? They're assuming that they own them?
They've gone forward with the assumption that, they've already got them and have offered me this really interesting little deal where I can put use my ebook rights to get their. Anyway, I don't want to get into this.
Oh, we'll have to have fun with that later.
Yes, exactly. So that's on my long journey. I haven't had a chance to talk to you about this. So.
Yeah.
We're breaking this on air. Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. So that's the situation that they're in. Now, I understand with a couple of these deals that have been made with authors who started out doing self-publishing, the way the deals have worked is that the authors are allowed to sell their ebook editions up to the point of publication.
Mm-hmm.
And then once print publication hits, the ebook sales then go over also to the publisher. With Hawking sold four of, I believe she had done 15 different books. So she sold the rights to four out of the 15.
Mm-hmm.
And so for her, it was a calculated risk to get her stuff on shelves, to get her known to readers in a larger audience. That's what she has felt. And apparently, I remember reading a study this morning that a number of studies have found that, and these percentages will be changing, but about 81% of people have discovered new authors based on going to bookstores, browsing, word of mouth, that sort of thing. Another 12% have found them by listening to other people, seeing some stuff online, but not exclusively online,
mm-hmm.
Certainly not in bookstores. They may have seen it on blogs. They may have seen it in social networking and those things. And then the rest of them have reported either finding it in different places, or I think, as I recall, the number was 1.2% said that they have found the last new book that they purchased exclusively through an online hit in a bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
So we still have got a large group of people that are relying on bookstores for being the place mm-hmm. that helps them discover things.
Well, old habits die hard. I mean, that's if you've been doing that your whole life, you don't want to change from that.
Now, the problem that we got is this, okay, is imagine, I'm just going to throw some numbers out there, but imagine that every 10-foot length of shelves in a bookstore can be home to 100 different titles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so every 10 feet is 100 different titles. Well, as we watch bookstores go away, mm-hmm. like Borders, okay, mm-hmm. that takes away
that much
shelf space. And as we watch other stores shrink in space, or as they expand certain other areas in their store, like, mm-hmm. you know, with a Barnes & Noble putting their Nook area in, there are going to be portions that are sacrificed there.
Well, and they're bringing in other merchandising. The biggest thing is that we've seen a lot of that shelf space being right. eaten up by coffee shops
right.
or by calendars or merchandise.
Or different market areas. Mm-hmm. I mean, last time I was in a Barnes & Noble, there were two large shelf spaces full of YA teen supernatural thrillers mm-hmm. that, you know, 2 years ago just weren't there.
Right.
So what that means then is that the opportunity for people to discover undiscovered books is shrinking, if for no other reason than slots available to shelve undiscovered books are shrinking.
And then the bookstores hold the ultimate power on who's going to get discovered by who they like and who they read and who they order.
Right. Now, one of the things I remember from back in the days, having these discussions back in the days when the Star Wars books were coming out, every publisher would have their book list. Okay, mm-hmm. They would have whatever the 24 books were that they were publishing that month. And depending upon who the book distributor was, like the book distributors that service Walgreens and Target mm-hmm. and those places, they would go through and they would choose the top two bestsellers out of mm-hmm. however many bestsellers the publisher said they would have. They might choose the top science fiction novel, and they would choose the top teen novel and the top Western novel, even though there might be four or five science fiction novels being published and mm-hmm. five or six teen novels being published that month. They would cherry pick that line. So already at that level, your choices, your ability to discover stuff is being limited.
Yep.
So we're in an interesting position where all of us now are going to have to look for new work based on what other people are saying in blogs,
mm-hmm.
what we see online, and moreover, if we want to make sure that these authors do well, we have to call attention
mm-hmm.
to these things that we really think are cool. I mean, you know, I've talked before about, yeah, you get to be a patron of the arts by actually buying a book. Because if my Fluffy the Cat stories, and I'm not doing any Fluffy the Cat stories, but if my Fluffy the Dragon stories are selling 100 copies in a month, and my, you know, Slithy the Radioactive Rat stories are selling 2, I know what I'm going to be writing more about. Now, if the radioactive...
I'm stealing Fluffy Dragon from you.
That's
you
know, fine. Go ahead.
That's my next story right there.
Because, frankly, I think the radioactive rat thing is going to take right off.
Hey, okay. my Fluffy Dragon's going to burn your rat up, man.
Yeah, okay. It's on.
It is on.
Just bring it. Okay. So, in any event. But the point is that, you know, we all really get to have an even greater impact in the lives of the authors that we really, really like by using all of this social networking to let other people know stuff is out there. And here's the funny thing about it. It's not just that, you know, in essence, you would be endorsing someone else's work and a person whose work you like.
Mm-hmm.
There are studies that basically show that, and this is why, you know, beer gets advertised so often. 7 times. You have to hear about something 7 yeah. times for it to lodge in your brain.
Absolutely.
So the life of any message on the internet is probably about 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that if you're not hitting a message, if you're not saying, oh, my God, I'm so happy that I found this, or reminding people at least every 2 weeks that something is out there,
mm-hmm.
it will never lodge. It will be as if it never existed.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely okay. Right. That's absolutely true.
So it's really kind of funny. I mean, people talk about in the digital age that it's the wild, wild west and there are no laws out there. That's not true. The laws of merchandising still apply.
They're always there. Yeah. Exactly. There's very smart people that got paid a lot of damn money in order to figure this stuff out, and it still holds true. Doesn't matter what medium, doesn't matter what market, doesn't matter what you're talking about, what kind of product you're talking about, it still holds true.
And if you don't think that that's true, ask yourself, Miller or Budweiser? Ask yourself, Kellogg's or Post? You know, ask yourself, Coke or Pepsi?
Kleenex or Puffs?
Kleenex or Puffs? You know, all of these choices. Yeah, I mean, McDonald's or Burger King?
Yeah.
All of these choices. When you come down and you go, oh, I like this brand, I don't like that brand, I prefer this brand over that brand. Yeah, it's part of your personal experience, but it's also how well they marketed that stuff to
you. Yeah, exactly.
And that's really where we are. As authors, both learning how to market the stuff to you and also learning how you guys want to get it.
Yep.
And so there's a lot of modifications going on with that, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that's indeed. But we'd better get to our interview here. Yes. And speaking of impressions, I guess we're going to have to give you one.
At Carina Press, we know that sci-fi can be sexy. Our ebooks are taking futuristic adventure to the next level. After all, the phrase opposites attract takes on a whole new meaning when astronauts and aliens make a connection. And passion in the midst of action does add a certain urgency to any interworld encounter. Discover how sexy the future can be at carinapress.com today.
Yeah, we're here to wake you up.
Wow. Holy mecca, my ears are bleeding.
Back with more Dragon Page Cover to Cover. We have guests.
Yes, we do. We have, well,
you, no, got, the there you, go.
You got the glasses on, not me.
Oh, that's right. Well, T. Morris is a name that you may know from ages ago on this show. He hasn't been on for a while, but him and Pip Ballantyne have joined us. They've got a new book out. It's called Phoenix Rising, and the long title. I'll let T. tell us the long title. Welcome to the show, T.
Well, hi, guys. It is very... it's really surreal being back. I was the guest that wouldn't go away, and then I went away. So it's nice to be back. It's really nice to be back, and this time I'm not alone. I have the ever so lovely Pip Ballantyne with me.
Hi, guys.
Hey. Hello.
And the full title of the book is called Phoenix Rising, a Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences novel. It is a steampunk romp set in Victorian London, and we had an absolute blast writing it.
Awesome.
It's coming out from Harper Voyager, and it's been a real delight working with Harper, and currently we're wrapping up the sequel to Ministry, which is to Phoenix Rising, which is called Of Cogs and Corsets, a Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences novel.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So tell us a little bit about it. What's going on in this? You said it was steampunky, so I'm assuming there's all kinds of really cool things in the cool world.
We try.
Yeah, we do try. I mean, the way I like to describe it to people is if you remember the days of John Steed and Emma Peel in the 1960s Avengers, that's basically steampunk that, and you've got the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences.
If you don't remember that, then Steampunk X-Files.
Or the Steampunk X-Files. Yeah, we throw in a dash of X-Files for fun. In a nutshell, what happens is that... the book opens with a rescue of the ministry's archivist, Wellington Books, and the mission goes a little more haywire than was originally planned for. So when Eliza Braun brings Wellington Books back to the ministry, they have to pull off some disciplinary action. So they demote Eliza to work in the archives with Wellington. And as they are working in the archives together, they come across a room full of unexplained, unsolved cases, and one of them involves Eliza's former partner. And that's where the story takes off. They start investigating this dead case on their own, and Wellington is very reluctant about it because he's all about the rules, and Eliza, being the field agent that she is from New Zealand, not caring about the rules, she drags him kicking and screaming into the fray. and there is there are carriage chases, there are explosions, there are
snarky banter.
There's a lot of snarky, and and we even throw in a pub brawl for kicks. So pretty much just your average your night out in Arizona. You know what I'm saying?
There you go.
and yeah, we did. We had a blast writing it. The thing I would describe about our steampunk though is that we try to make our steampunk make sense. And what I mean by that is we don't gloss it over where everyone's just wearing goggles because it's in fashion. We actually use the goggles for practical reasons. We actually have our inventions take a part in the story. You know, the debate about steampunk, you know, what is steampunk? Well, for us, it's the technology of today back in the 19th century. So we're having them use it. It doesn't become just sort of a setting. You know, you don't just walk by and go, oh, look, a difference engine. They're actually using the difference engine. They're actually using whatever gadget we're throwing at them.
Oh, very cool. Now, you've got the subtitle, you said, of both this book and the sequel. The subtitle is A Ministry of
Peculiar occurrences.
See, Michael keeps taking that page away from me, so I can't see it. Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences novel. So have you guys done short stories and other work? Otherwise, why would you label it as, you know, a novel?
Well, we are doing a podcast short story collection as well that's sort of under that same umbrella. And we also have some ideas for other spin-off novels, like a YA title and another spin-off novel that also might come under the same Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences title. Yeah. Branding. It's all about branding.
That's right. And and your fingers in lots of different areas, of course.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. This was the idea from the start, was that we would make this a series. We would make it some type of series we could go back to, and then if we did short stories, we could say it's a Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences anthology, a Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences graphic novel, whatever we could go back to. And it so far has been working out great. We've not only had some terrific advance reader response to the novel, but the We've been really proud that the anthology Tales from, or I should say the podthology, if you want to call it the podcast anthology, the podthology Tales from the Archives. It's been running on iTunes for for the past month now, and we're coming up on 2 months. We're coming up on 2 months on iTunes, and we're still managing to hang in the top four of new and notable.
Hanging on Scott Sigler.
Yeah, we're hanging on.
We're like a little tick. on the massive back of Scott Sigler.
There we go. It actually reminds me of the day when Scott Hutch and myself were vying for the number one slot at Patio Books. You know, it's like one day Scott, you know, the starter is number one under New and Noteworthy, and then Tales from the Archives is New and Noteworthy, and then some other podcast comes along and knocks us both out. But it really has been a lot of fun though, because we opened up our universe to other authors.
We had some great people, like Nathan Lowell wrote us a great steampunk story set in Africa, and we're getting Phil Rossi to write some and set in America, I think that one is, and South
Jack
America.
Mangan. He's written us something also set in America. And then we had PC Herring take us to South America for his steampunk. So they're really capturing the international feel of steampunk. It's not just stuff set in Victorian London, even though our novel is set primarily in the city proper. It really has been a joy working with other writers and also working with Harper Voyager in putting this new series together.
Well, so talk a little bit about the whole collaborative process between the two of you, and then kind of expand it
I have a big stick, and whenever I disagree with something, I hit T in the head with it. I found it works very well.
which is why I liked it better when she was living in New Zealand. The funny thing about the collaborative process between me and Pip is that our productivity actually went down when she came here to the United States.
It's because of that lovely Dateline thing. I would be writing in New Zealand, and then I would go to bed and T would take over, and while I was asleep, he'd be writing, and then it was amazing. You can actually squeeze a lot out of 24 hours if you do it that way.
Yeah, and then sure. when she got here, it was like wait a minute, we're sleeping at the same time now. Oh crap! And
no one's writing.
We've had to adjust. Now I will say though, the editorial and the brainstorming process though has been a lot easier with Pip being here. The downside, the upside of the writing aspect of it was 24 hours of solid writing. The downside of that, and we were doing this via Skype. We both had MacBooks, so we're doing the video chat. But the downside was that due to the time difference, if I was getting up for the day, Pip was heading to bed. So we had like roughly an hour. We had a window of 1 hour in my morning and then 1 hour in my night where we could swap ideas.
Yeah, it made the editing quite. There was so much more editing to do because we had to sort of seam it all together rather than being able to talk about, you know, what did you write in this chapter and what am I going to write in the next chapter. So it's had pluses and minuses.
But as far as the collaborative process in our writing styles, Pip and I wound up being very compatible. And what was also nice was that we could, and this is one of the advantages of working with a talented co-writer, is that you sit down and you edit your partner's stuff, and then the partner edits your stuff, and you trade off. And then that's when the real meshing of the styles happen. I mean, when I write by myself, I have an entirely different style than the way Pip writes when she's on her own. I'm currently reading Geist, and I'm like, this isn't the same person that I work with.
Well, that's because when we started off, when we started writing, our styles were completely different, and along the way, some weird mongrel
mind meld
strangeness happened, and we managed to find some middle ground with the help of the stick.
With the help of the stick, yes. The big stick is always a big help, yeah.
Well, now, we do want to cover a little bit on Pip, too, here, because, Pip, you have a new book coming out as well.
Yes. I, looking beyond the ministry, yes, I've got Spectre, which is the second book that I have with Ace, coming out at the end of June. I originally did a two-book deal with Ace, which was going to be Geist and Spectre, and then after Geist came out, they came back at me for another two books, so it's going to be four books in total. So, poor me. Everyone's really, really very sorry for me. And
Actually, it was funny, though. I think they were trying to play on Pip's good nature for being from New Zealand and very laid back, because the editor came back and said, so we want two more books. Same price, right?
Yeah, that's when my agent started laughing. It was sweet.
Well, for those of our listeners that aren't aware of this series, give us a little rundown. What is this book about?
Well, Geist is more high fantasy, epic fantasy than ministry. It has some steampunk qualities, but it's basically set in a world in which the supernatural is not a maybe, it is a definitely. People know that ghosts, for want of a better word, come through, can inhabit your granny and make her head spin around 360 degrees. These things are just a given. So they have an order of clerics. Well, they used to be clerics. They're not religious anymore, but they work together in pairs. There's a sensitive and an active, and they basically go around trying to clear up these intrusions of the supernatural. And it's the story of Sorsha, who's an older, she's probably in her late 30s, she's an active, and she gets paired up with a young rookie, and they get sent off to, it's the usual, a simple case at the edge of the empire, off you go, and oh my goodness, they get there and they discover it's so much more. And so it's sort of a steampunk-esque buddy cop high fantasy.
With naughty bits.
She has
naughty bits in there.
No.
The naughty bits are quite naughty, and they're quite sultry, and it's quite nice.
It's not erotica.
Well, that's fantastic. It sounds like you guys are really kicking the tires and lighting the fire, so to speak. And
the great thing about about Phoenix Rising is we are very fortunate. We are very fortunate in that we already have international sales on the line.
Oh, yeah, forgot about that.
Yeah, we, in fact, with the book is coming out roughly Sometime next, all we know is it's sometime next week. One part of Amazon says it's coming out on the 26th. Another part says it's coming out May 1st. Whatever it comes out, it comes out in the United States then, and then on June 1st, it hits Australia and New Zealand markets.
And then we've got Germany and Russia, but we're not quite sure when they're coming out. But,
right. So pretty much the book's paid for. The advance is paid for, and we're thrilled about that.
But still keep buying books, you know.
Oh, yeah. We have a saying over at Harper Voyager, buy as many books as you want, don't worry, we'll make more. And we've got some events coming up. We're actually going to our first steampunk convention. We're going to the Steampunk World's Fair in
Somerset, New Jersey,
and that is the 21st and the 23rd. Mm-hmm. And then the 27th through the 30th, we're going back to the old haunt. We're going back to Balticon. And
I am the new media guest of honor.
Pip is the new media guest of honor.
And she will be carrying my bag.
Which is no different than any other con we've been to. And then we also have WorldCon, so I don't know if I'll be seeing you guys at WorldCon, but that's in Reno. And then after that, we're going to hit FenCon.
In Dallas,
Texas, and then we're going to probably also hit Archon in St. Louis, Missouri.
Awesome.
Sure.
Plenty of places to get out and see, it sounds like. That's fantastic.
Yeah, we're in San Francisco. We're going to be in San Francisco doing signing at the end of the month. So.
April 30th, we're going to be at Borderland Books. It's a gorgeous bookstore. I don't know if you guys have ever gotten out there, but it's just a beautiful,
lovely little indie.
Beautiful indie store. So support your indie store. Come on out and support us. We'll be there from 3 to 5 on April 30th. And if you're curious as to where we're going to have our first Virginia signing, because that's where we're based out of, we're going back to where we shot the Phoenix Rising book trailer. We're going to Stanton, Virginia, again another indie bookstore called Bookworks, and I bring this up because if you've not seen it, you can go to YouTube and find the steampunk book trailer.
And CT run like Dick Van Dyke.
I was channeling my inner Dick Van Dyke. I'm not sure what happened there, but it's funny. When we put together the book trailer, people were saying, when did you start editing in green screen? And I said, what are you talking about? And they said, these sets, they're gorgeous, but they're virtual, right? It was all shot in downtown Stanton, Virginia. And it was perfect for what we wanted. So you can check that out on YouTube, and you can check it out on our website at ministryofpeculiarcurrences.com.
Wow, that is cool. Awesome. And I tell you what, we're completely out of time, but we thank you so much for being with us today. And we'll have all of those links on dragonpage.com, and I'm sure you guys have a website as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yep, we got ministryofpeculiarcurrences.com, pjvalentine.com, and, of course, T. Morris, singing along if you know the words, .com.
There we go. All righty. Well, thank you so much, guys, and we'll be back with more Dragon Page right after this.
Take your Gmail account to the next level with the Gmail Podcast. The Gmail Podcast will make you more proficient and teach you features about Gmail you may not have known. In just a few minutes, you'll learn tips and tricks that'll help you stay organized using Gmail. If you don't yet have a Gmail account, log on right now to chuckchat.com and let us know. We'll be happy to send you an invite. Get the most out of your Gmail account with the Gmail Podcast, available at chuckchat.com. You've got Gmail.
Well, that was an interesting interview.
Yes, absolutely.
I thought it was really cool the way that they're actually looking at this as being more of a property than just the novels, and trying to find those ways to use all
absolutely.
The different media, you know, to
absolutely to because things. We've said it so many times on this show, and it is so true, and it's getting more true every day. And that is, you can't be focusing on one aspect of anything anymore. I mean, there's so many places, there's so many sources, there's so many things that you can do with your product, and it is a product.
Yep.
You may think this is your baby, this is your story, and all this is my poured my heart and soul into it. Well, yeah, that's great, but it's still a product, and you still have to treat it as such.
And you know, the other thing is that again, we talked in the opening of the show about, you know, the things of the digital marketplace being a wild, wild west, and the new future being the wild, wild west. I think more of it as a farmer's market.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the things that I'm looking at trying out this summer, just to see if it works, is to take my digital novel in Hero Years, mm-hmm. and I'll do some CDs of it. I'll do short run CDs, but I can sell those at conventions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for somebody who wants to get the book right now, but is away from their computer, doesn't want to download it, you know, or that sort of thing, or they want to buy it and have it autographed.
Mm-hmm.
I can do that right there. That becomes yet one more avenue for us to be able to explore and to do things that, you know, that one, traditional publishers just aren't thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
But two, becomes something for us to really push as we go forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
oh, absolutely.
I mean, you know, CD is a hell of a lot easier to carry around than a book.
Yeah, but we're getting to the point now where it's, what's a CD? You know, that's becoming an issue.
But it also is becoming, that also becomes, gives you the souvenir aspect of it. You know, I bought the book from the author, which they're going to be doing anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And now I've got it in a sleeve and I can get that autographed.
Right.
You know, and that's all of what, $5-6 for something?
You got to get good at writing really small so you can autograph flash drives. That's it.
No. No, I don't want to autograph flash drive.
No, an SD card, maybe?
There's some other things. There's some other things I've been talking about with some other authors, and as we make them actually work, there are things, I think that there are other things that we're going to be able to do that will be a lot of fun along this regard,
mm-hmm.
and once we get those working, and it's not that they're going to be highly expensive. Matter of fact, they're going to be really interactive with everybody, mm-hmm. with our readers. But once that stuff starts going, all of a sudden we're going to be able to have a different level of connection with the readers and different ways for them to signal their involvement with what we're doing,
mm-hmm.
To make things material. You know, I mean, my greatest regret about the whole digital publishing thing is this, is that, you know, sitting in an airport lounge, I won't be able to look across the way and see somebody reading one of my books. You know, you'll just never know.
You'll never know.
Yeah.
Wow.
But, yeah, so there it is.
Well, and there it is. That's going to do it for this show. But that's an interesting closing thought, but we'll take it.
There you go.
All right, folks, you know the website, dragonpage.com. Of course, Google us. We're everywhere. We're everywhere. Just put Dragon Page in. You'll find all kinds of stuff about us.
That's right.
All righty. We will see you again next week, folks.